So let's welcome to this week's Has-Been Corner, Gail Slobodkin. Well, that was just wonderful.
Thank you.
Okay. What was it like when you first realized that you weren't going to make it in show business?
Michael Malice here. Welcome to Nightshade for you to send to Vietnam. We have a lot to cover. It turns out three friends of mine had big stories about them today, but the first issue, which is most important and near and dear to my heart, is, of course, the North Korean summit. So let me spend a little bit of time giving y'all my thoughts on this most important of issues. I did an interview today with Breitbart and with Joe Pags on the subject. First of all, the question of, okay, why is it a big deal that Kim Jong-un is taking a train to Vietnam instead of taking a plane? I wouldn't read too much into it. He took a plane to Singapore. His father, as I discuss in my book, Dear Reader, at length, Kim Jong-il, was not a big plane aficionado. Despite what it says in the mythology, he was flying fighter jets even better than the North Korean pilots. But in real life, he traveled almost exclusively by car or by train. He had this very fortified train that for security purposes. In fact, there was one time where it looked like there was an assassination attempt where there was a bomb that blew up on the tracks where his train had been or was going to be at a certain point. And his point was, why do I got to get in a plane when we have the Prime Minister of Japan, the President of South Korea, President of Russia, Chinese leaders, Madeleine Albright, Secretary of State, they're all coming to North Korea, former President Bill Clinton, they're all coming to North Korea to kiss the ring. So for him, it was a sign of strength that he could sit in his house in Pyongyang and have people come to him, just like a gangster who goes to whose table. I've made this point in several interviews in the past. So this is a big deal that we're getting the leader out of his home base. Now the question is Vietnam. What is the significance that we are doing this in Vietnam? Well, there's good things and bad things. You could look at the symbolism this way. Vietnam was a place where America was defeated. So don't ever forget that you lost once, you could lose again. That's one possibility. Vietnam was also a nation that was split in two and then reunified. So you can look at it that way, that, you know, this is about reunification. So that's a positive thing. Vietnam, I believe, is one of three or four countries that still identifies as communist, although they're communist only in name. North Korea does not any longer identify as communist. So you could look at it in that way. Look that up. Is it Vietnam that's still communist or Laos? It's Vietnam. I just want to be 100% sure that I'm not misinforming everyone, so I'd rather check than not. What to look forward to out of this meeting? If anyone in the press is telling you, well, what does this mean for Trump? Who cares? They're completely missing the mark. The only issue that matters regarding North Korea, in my view, is what does this mean for the peaceful liberation of the North Korean people? I had a question today, like, oh, well, what if this leads to, you know, a reduction in aggression between North and South Korea, and we start pulling troops out of South Korea? Yeah, that's the goal. A peaceful Korean peninsula. That's really, like, the best scenario. We do not need to have troops there. South Korea is a very advanced economy. Certainly, anyone with, I don't think this is even up for debate, a peaceful relationship, diplomatic relationship between North and South Korea, with the North liberalizing and having normalizing relationships and becoming a normal country would be the goal. It's Vietnam, correct?
That's what it seems like, but we don't really have a straight answer yet. We're going through a few different pages.
If you go to Wikipedia, on the right hand, on the issue for Vietnam, on the right hand, there'll be a bar, and one of those things, it'll say, I think, ruling party or ruling ideology. Anyway, Those are two things to look for. Here are some low-hanging fruit that we're going to expect. One is a formalization of the end of the Korean War. It's currently an armistice, as everyone probably knows by this point. To have it be the Korean War is officially over costs everyone nothing, and it's very symbolic. This is what politicians like. Low cost, high talking point. So that would be one thing. I'm sure behind the scenes there's going to be enormous pressure regarding human rights. I'm sure there's going to be pressure about the nuclear weapons. I don't care about the nukes because China has a lot of nukes. So even if North Korea completely denuclearizes, you have the threat of China. And number one. Number two is Pakistan and India have had nukes pointed at each other for a couple of decades now. They're not a concern. Nor is Pakistan a particular friend of the United States. And this is where bin Laden was hiding. Let's keep that in mind, in his capital city. Yep.
So for Laos, it says the government is a unitary Marxist-Leninist one-party socialist republic.
Okay. And for Vietnam?
Vietnam says it's a unitary Marxist-Leninist one-party socialist republic.
Yeah. Okay. So those are two of the three, the few countries that identify as communist. Okay. Thank you. I'm glad I got that right. I don't want to misinform people on this of all issues. This is not my issue for trolling. Those are two things to look for. Another big one is family reunification, to have increasing contact between the North Korean and South Korean families that were separated by the Korean War for decades now. If you go watch those videos on YouTube where people who haven't seen each other have had no word of each other for a very long time are reunified, it will cause you to cry. It's just extremely emotional, very touching. It just speaks to the depravity of the North Korean regime that people aren't allowed to know what's happening to their brother, sister, dad, mom, kids, grandkids, living completely separated lives simply due to the machinations of the Kim family. So these are some simple things to look forward to. People who are rooting for this to fail, I will say, are evil people. That's just all it comes down to, because failure means just more time that all those North Koreans are slaves to this regime. So they should be rooting for success, regardless of what you think about President Trump, regardless of what you think about Kim Jong-un, which I hope you realize how evil and he is and his government is. If you haven't gotten that by this point and haven't read Dear Reader, I might not be the Willy Wonka of politics for you. And now we have some quite disturbing news. This is probably the most disturbing story I have had to cover on this show ever. It came across my desk on Twitter. So I'm just going to read it straight. And yeah, that's where we are. Okay, so UFC legend Matt Hughes. I took that photo in his old house. He's wearing my glasses. Has been ordered to stay 500 feet away from his wife, who claims Matt has physically attacked her multiple times and once threatened to shoot her. This is all part of court documents, which have been obtained by TMZ Sports. I have not seen the documents, in which Audra Hughes, Mrs. Matt Hughes, describes a disturbing pattern of violence and abusive behavior beginning in 2017. A lot of people on Twitter were like, oh, I'm not surprised. If you read his autobiography, you should have seen this coming. Well, I co-authored that autobiography. I didn't see this coming. So, yeah. As they point out on TMZ here, he got nearly died when a train struck his truck in a June 2017 accident. I don't think it was actually his truck, is my understanding. It was somebody else's truck. That left him with a serious brain injury. Audra, the wife, says shortly after he recovered from the trauma in September or October 2017, he roughed her up badly in the shower. She claims she refused to give him his truck keys, saying, I told him he couldn't have them. This is because he shouldn't drive due to his DAI, his brain injury. She alleges that Matt then slapped and choked her and asked her for the code to his gun vault, which
Sorry, Michael. The copy says he then snapped, not slapped.
Oh, thank you. Okay, that is important. He snapped and choked her and asked her for the code to his gun vault. I've been in his gun vault. One of the guns he has in there is that Liberator, which they dropped to Jews behind Nazi lines, which apparently actually didn't do anything. When she refused again, she says he choked her, smashed her head against the shower wall, and screamed, "This is what choking is." She says, nearly a year later, July 21st, 2018, last July, he told her, I'm going to fucking shoot you, because she took his phone claiming that he was communicating with multiple women. And just a few months later, December 12th, what's that, like 2 months ago, 10 weeks ago, he hit her in front of her son, Joey, their daughter, Hannah, and her stepdad, Alan, who's like Ned Flanders, who is the best, after she accused him of texting other women. It's really gross that they said her son. Well, maybe it's the court articles, because he's not Matt's biological son, but Matt raised him, and, you know. She filed for a restraining order the following day, and the judge has since ordered Matt to stay at least 500 feet away from Audra and the kids. And there's even more sad news. His twin brother, Mark. Can you pull up a photo of Mark Hughes? Just put Mark Hughes MMA or Mark Hughes UFC. They're not identical twins, but they look really close, like Goofus and Gallant. Mark competed in the UFC in 2000. He also filed for a restraining order against Matt, saying Matt roughed up his son and tried to destroy his Mark's son, Griffin, and tried to destroy his tractor. Mark says, the brother, that the two had a disagreement over which brother actually owns the tractor. And when Matt saw Mark's 15-year-old son driving it sometime later, on September 23rd, 2018, he lost it on the kid. Mark alleges Matt grabbed his son, shook him, and told him that's his fucking tractor. And Mark also says a week later, December 30th, he believes Matt doused the tractor and its surrounding area in gasoline and suspects Matt was trying to destroy it. Mark filed for a restraining order the next day, which was granted, ordering Matt to stay away from his own twin brother and Mark's family. And the article goes on to say incorrectly that he was a two-time welterweight champion. He was a nine-time welterweight champion and piled up a 45-9 career record and was recently recognized as a guest of honor on January 14th, 2018 at a UFC fight night in St. Louis. Do we have a picture of Mark?
We sure do. That's him right there.
That's not Mark.
That's the best.
That's not Mark.
All the pictures are mostly of Matt when you look up Mark Hughes, and then that one we deciphered may have been him.
No,
it's
no,
not.
It's not, that's not him, but that's okay. He looks like Matt, a little more scruffy. So this is very disturbing stuff indeed. I talked to Audra after this article hit. I can't get into anything, but to say this has shooken me up is a bit of an understatement. Let's just put it that way. Okay. On to some lighter but also upsetting news. Jacob Wall. We got a picture of Jacob. He always has this aspie. Yeah, he always has that expression on his face. This is from NBC. Jacob Wall, who a conservative activist who infamously tried to smear special counsel Robert Mueller, has been banned from Twitter today for operating a ring of fake accounts. He operated a Twitter account called @women_4_Schultz, which posed as a supporter of former Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz. And he also operated two other banned accounts, according to a source familiar with the accounts who was not authorized to speak publicly. Wall's account was suspended for multiple violations of Twitter rules, specifically creating and operating fake accounts, Twitter told NBC News in a statement. You know, it's very interesting. When they ban you for, like, political reasons, they say we can't comment. But when they actually have something to ban you for, and this is can easily be seen as a violation of terms of service, they'll be like, oh, this is why we banned you. So which is it? Twitter. @Jack. Wall became the center of controversy in October when he claimed an unaffiliated intelligence firm had proof that Mueller had sexually assaulted an unnamed woman. The phone number for the intelligence firm was registered to Jacob's mother. The firm, intelligence firm's document attempting to prove the allegations was riddled with inaccuracies, and Wall never produced the accuser. In a phone interview Tuesday evening, this evening, he admitted to operating that Women for Schultz account. He said, this is par for the course. We were just talking about how this was probably going to happen. He initially said he didn't create that handle before backpedaling and claiming the account. He goes, thank you for reminding me. I tweeted at it to be goofy, but it's not a fake account. I was tweeting about women's issues that Schultz happens to be good on. this morning, he was had been profiled in USA Today, in which he said he planned to create fake Twitter and Facebook profiles in order to steer the left-wing votes in primaries to what he felt were our weaker candidates compared with Trump. Jacob, Bubala, let me explain something to you. If you're going to be a supervillain, you don't have the monologue where you reveal your master plan. That's not how it works. He also said he didn't see a problem with his strategy. He goes, it is not illegal, unethical, or untoward for Americans to steer an American election. I'm an American. What? He claimed without evidence that anti-Semitism, was behind his suspension as retribution for his efforts in an investigation of Representative Ilhan Omar. Wall is Jewish and calls himself a Zionist on Twitter. Called himself, rather. That's Laura Loomer's argument, too, that she was kicked off Twitter because she's Jewish. Because obviously, as we know, there are very few Jews on Twitter. Don't rat me out, people. I think I'm passing. Wall said, in my entire adult life, I've had 3 Twitter accounts. He said his main one, Jacob A. Wall, an account for his private investigation company, and a 3rd unnamed account reserved for a think tank that he was planning to launch. Cool. Women for Schultz tweeted mostly videos from Schultz, along with talking points Schultz sometimes did not share. The account had a minor viral moment on February 1st while echoing one of Wall's own false talking points about 2020 Democratic candidate Kamala Harris. Kamala Harris does not represent American women. Unlike Howard Schultz, she traded sexual favors for public office. How is that untrue? Isn't that the thing that she slept with Willie Brown? Now, it's tasteless to say, perhaps, but she slept with Willie Brown. He helped her career. I thought that was pretty much established in San Francisco, but I could be wrong. That tweet received hundreds of retweets and likes. So I'm going to try to – I might see Jacob this weekend. I'm hosting the Night for Freedom event. I don't know how I'm going to troll the crowd best. And I don't need suggestions because then people know what I've got. So I'm going to figure something out, and it's going to be really funny. Or it might not be trolling. Maybe I'll just be earnest. Where my head is right now is as I introduce each speaker, I'm going to read some quotes from a – freedom fighter that I admire, and that would encourage people to learn more about that person. So I'll maybe keep it a little bit erudite. Or maybe I'll come out and speak with a heavy Russian accent for no reason, or a noose and a MAGA cap and bleach. Who knows? That's going to be Saturday. You could go to get tickets at anightforfreedom.com. And my other buddy, Raheem Kassam, there he is. That's a good picture of him. Yeah.
I could find a worse one if you want.
Yeah, I think I do. He's kind of he could be a bit of a dick in a good way, but yeah, let's fuck with him. Get a photo, go to a video of him talking and then freeze frame it so he looks like an asshole. That's the way to do it. You know, like when Homer Simpson is like, argh. Yeah, that's what we want for Raheem. And don't freeze frame that face I just made, people. I'm on to you. So, and this is actually very, very, very upsetting. Raheem is hardly some out there extremist. He was editor-in-chief. He was the editor of British Breitbart. He was Nigel Farage's right-hand man. So he is not a fringe candidate, unless you want to call Nigel Farage a fringe candidate. But Farage sits in the parliament, in the European Parliament. So, and was the head of UKIP. So and was the man behind Brexit, which was a major political issue, of course. So this morning, they deleted his personal page and disabled his fan page. He says, he tweeted out, "What a thing to wake up to. My personal Facebook profile has been deleted with no warning or explanation. I can no longer administer my fan page with over 150,000 likes." Now, who came to the rescue? Donald Trump Jr. Junior said, you got a good shot? "I'm sure this was an accident, like I've been hearing from the social media masters. Funny that the accidents only happen one way." Yeah. Keep going. That was the same tweet. A few hours after Trump Jr.'s comment, much better. We can do worse. Get him on video and just pause it while he's blinking. A few hours after that comment, his page had been reinstated, and they did not provide him with any explanation for this ordeal. Amazing. It wasn't clear if it... That looks better.
I thought it looked worse.
No, he looks good. You got to pause it so his eyes are closed or something.
All right. Hold on.
He's dressed well there, too. All right. It wasn't clear if they disabled the page due to American or European politics. Nick Clegg, who had been deputy prime minister and head of the UK's Liberal Lib Dems, Facebook hired him as chief of global policy and communications in October. Kassam posted in praise of Tommy Robinson on Monday, shortly before he was suspended, calling a documentary Robinson produced a must-watch for anyone interested in how mainstream news organizations collaborate with hard-left groups to create fake news about the political right. So now praising Tommy Robinson gets you banned. Here's the thing. Facebook announced Robinson was banned from Facebook and Instagram at nearly the same time Kassam was suspended. There you go. That's the one. That's the one. Yeah. Keep that one for future reference, okay?
Copy that.
Yeah. There we go. How's it feel, Raheem? So Kassam is scheduled to speak at CPAC in Maryland later this week. As he said, the blunt instrument of censorship has long been used as a means of aggression and a form of violence against conservative thought and speech. This latest foray by Facebook against someone who's a best-selling author and main stage speaker at CPAC seems to imply a new salient in their assault on conservatives. A salient? That's not what he means. They must quote him. No longer are they simply targeting the fringe or edgy voices. They are also coming for people with a far more mainstream following. It's the third time Facebook has been accused of censoring conservatives over the last several weeks. Last week, Instagram prevented users from liking posts published by Donald Trump Jr. And earlier in the month, Facebook and Instagram were both accused of blocking posts from users who were critical of Jussie Smollett for staging his own assault. Facebook said in a statement, this profile was removed in error and was restored as soon as we were able to investigate. Here's why this is a big deal. What the fuck happens to the person who doesn't have Donald Trump Jr. who have his back? They're done. And there's nothing they can do. So this isn't like, okay, we made a mistake. You keep making these mistakes. The question is, what steps are you putting in place to make sure these mistakes don't happen again? Here's another thing. I wouldn't be surprised if Raheem's Facebook pages are a way for him to generate money, book sales or something, something, anything. That's revenue he's lost without any explanation, error. It should be take a lot of work before someone is completely removed without warning from a social media site. Now, you can run a site. It's a private company, however you want. You can't play dumb and expect people to believe you and have people respect you and not ask questions and open the door for competitors. So this is really, I'm glad things worked out for him. But again, what happens to the person who doesn't have Trump Jr. tweeting out in his defense? You're done. What if it's some small business or some small independent, someone who's self-published a book? This is absolutely vile. Speaking of fun stuff, Michael Cohen is going after the president. He's going to be testifying that the president broke the law as president. And a Republican congressman allied with President Trump accused Trump's former attorney, Michael Cohen, of cheating on his wife and suggested today that the details will soon be made public. Here's what Matt Gaetz wrote on Twitter. He's a representative from Florida. Do your wife and father-in-law know about your girlfriends? Maybe tonight would be a good time for that chat. You don't think he'd have his number? The fact that this was public is very weird. I wonder if she'll remain faithful when you're in prison. She's about to learn a lot. Gaetz is a member of the House Oversight and Reform Committee. And Cohen, who's 52, will be testifying tomorrow before that panel about his time working for Trump. The former Trump fixer will reportedly testify about his business practices as well as his interactions with Trump regarding payments made to women who claimed to have affairs with the real estate mogul. Cohen pled guilty on August 21st to making an illegal campaign contribution in the form of a $130,000 payment to Stormy Daniels. the porn star who claimed she had an affair with Trump in 2006. But he also pled guilty to tax evasion, bank fraud, and lying to Congress about his negotiations to build a Trump Tower in Moscow. Cohen, who begins a 3-year prison sentence, ouch, on May 6th, was also allegedly involved in negotiations to pay off Karen McDougal, who's a former Playboy playmate who also claims she had an affair with Trump. Susan McDougal was the one who sued Clinton. That's kind of interesting. Actually, it's not interesting in the slightest. Why do you think it was interesting? That's stupid of you. You're stupid. Cohen met behind closed doors today with Senate Select Committee on Intelligence and will testify privately Thursday to the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. And the last thing we're going to talk about today, that we now have a third Democrat who is coming out in favor of reparations. This is Castro, former mayor in Texas, speaking on the subject. Let's play a little of this. Julian Castro.
The idea the Democratic Party is moving quickly to the left, is moving out of the mainstream. There's one position you took in the last couple of days that's getting some conversation. Some other candidates as well have taken that I was interested in. It was on this question of reparations. Reparations payments to Black Americans with a family legacy that can be traced back to slavery. You said the country would be better off if it found a way to...
Does anyone really think that they're actually going
to do that?
Does anyone actually think that they're going to sit down and do the math and look it up? Because it's one thing to pay these people back, but I'm an immigrant. I've had nothing to do with slavery. So am I going to get taxed to pay for this? I mean, there was a comment when this country was founded or soon thereafter about what happens when the people realize that they can vote themselves rich at the rich's expense and have a looting. I mean, this is as blatant as it gets. Like, okay, things have been bad. There's been oppression. We're just going to cut you a check. Cutting someone a check doesn't make up for structural racism. Cutting someone a check does not make up for police brutality or for being given subpar service in restaurants or being denied opportunities. It's just a check.
What if it was for like a lot of money though?
But you mean if it was like a big novelty check?
If it was like a 3-foot wide or whatever,
yeah.
$1 million check.
And then the memo field, it would say for reparations.
Exactly, yeah. Can we cash this here?
Yeah, you just gotta sign, that's one big check. So that's neither here nor there. This is just blatant bribery to get the Black vote, which is so important in the Democratic primaries. But most importantly, if one of the big issues of 2016 was losing middle-class white votes to the Republicans, this certainly isn't going to bring them back. And it's interesting to see that both parties are doubling down so heavily in certain senses based on demographics. Let's play the rest of this nonsense.
It's not an issue that really has gotten a lot of sort of mainstream discussion. The most recent poll I could find on it, I think it was about 2 or 3 years old. It showed 2/3 of Americans opposed that idea. There, you put up on the screen, 68% were against reparations payments. I wonder if you could just talk a little bit more about what it is you would do as president when it came to that. And if you are worried that sends a message to that 68% of Americans who say they're against it, that maybe you are out of the mainstream a little.
Well, you know, this is not something that I think of through a political lens. I have long believed.
Oh my God! Oh my God! Holy shit! It's not a political issue. Taxing one population and giving that cash to another via the government—that's not about politics. It's just about doing the right thing. Now, what that number is, I will figure that out. It's the right number. And no matter what she says, I'm going to say more. But it's not political. He says the one running for president. Get the fuck out of here. Finish this nonsense.
Country should resolve its original sin of slavery. And that one of the ways we should consider doing that is through reparations for people who are the descendants of slaves.
Okay, pause this.
It is
to me. If it's going to be about solving this country's original sin and making up for the past, is there anyone on earth who, even it was Helen Keller, who had a brain injury and deceased, who will say with a straight face, if we have reparations, people aren't going to use slavery as a wedge issue from that point on, and people are going to say that the consequences of slavery have not been resolved. The conversation would not move one iota. And any claim to the alternative is insane and absurd. And on that lighthearted note, I will see you all tomorrow. Until then, I wish you sweet dreams.
We got some big girls. I hope they don't have diabetes. You look really familiar.